You are listening to the What a Word podcast, an interview style podcast where guests bring their unique experiences and insight on culture, life's challenges, and faith. Each episode is seasoned with words which will inspire and encourage. Now here is your host, Ryan Sharp.
Welcome to the What a Word podcast. It's been a minute since I've had an episode, and I'm thankful to be back. I missed my audience, whether you listen on the audio podcast or you check out the YouTube channel. What a Word podcast is available on Apple, Spotify, and Google. And we're happy to share. And it's good to be back. I think the last episode I published was a number of months ago. But since that time, some of you know that my wife and I are proud parents again of a beautiful baby girl, if I may say so myself, Tatum. And having a brand new baby, it makes your schedule a lot more creative. But we're thankful in this season. It's a new year. And this is our first episode of 2023. And I'm honored today to have a friend of mine, Charlene Green. She's an attorney, and has a very impactful estate planning practice that offers targeted solutions to individuals and families who are planning their lives and securing their futures. I want to say a little bit more about Charlene. She received her Juris Doctorate degree from Emory University in 2002. And she also received a Bachelor's of Science degree in Political Economy and graduated cum laude. There's a lot more to say. In June 2014, she was the featured attorney for the Attorney's Corner in the Atlanta Tribune magazine titled Charlene Green, Esquire, Real Estate Lawyer, Protects Families and Children. I'm honored to have her here. She'll share about her journey and her work. Please join me in welcoming Charlene Green to the What a Word podcast. Welcome, Charlene.
Thank you for having me.
Listen, man, I am excited about this. I'm excited about your work. And as I may have shared with listeners on previous episodes, my guest will share about life, culture, life's challenges, culture, and faith. And I'm happy to have Charlene on. She's an estates planning attorney, and we're going to discuss her journey. And I'm hoping that whether you're an attorney or not, whatever your journey is, that something that's shared today will give you inspiration to keep going and not to give up on your journey. So Charlene, you and I had the opportunity to speak offline, just catching up a bit. I wanted to know, what's 2023 looking like for you so far? What are you grateful for in this season?
Well, Ryan, thank you again for having me. Happy New Year. Congratulations on the new baby. I know it's exciting times. And I saw her picture on Facebook. She is absolutely adorable. The biggest, brightest eyes I've ever seen. I know.
Thank you. You're just such a proud papa.
I am grateful for so many things. I'm happy to be in the new year, healthy. You know, I have two children of my own who I'm just, growing up fast. My daughter's the 11th grade, so be off to college in a little bit. And that's a little scary to think about, you know, so life's going to change a little bit. But happy just to be here, grateful for my practice, my work, the started expanding, hired an associate attorney last year. So I have expanded my team so I can be more impactful and help more and just kind of move things along. And so just really optimistic and looking forward to the new year and all the things that can unfold there.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Now, your journey, and you've been practicing for some time, but how did a little brown girl decide, with all the various options in the world, that you wanted to become an attorney?
And you know, that's interesting. When I think back on it, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm a box checker. I'm a, you know, I don't, I'm not, I am creative. I'd stop saying I'm not creative, but I like the box, right? So I early on, I wanted to figure out, I think maybe I was end of elementary school or something like that, middle school. And I grew up in Queens, New York. And we were talking about, you know, careers, what we wanted to do. And I was asked that question, and it just dawned on me that I didn't know, you know, what I wanted to be. And I was 12 years old, and I was determined to figure it out. And I went through a few different options. You know, I remember working in a bank was one of them because I like math. Ironically, accounting didn't come up, and I sometimes think that was a miss for me because I do like numbers. I like the exactness. You know, I'm very detail oriented, that type of thing. But what happened was my parents and I was involved in a car accident my some of my 12th year, while I was 12, and we went to a lawyer's office a couple months later. And I remember sitting in the lawyer's office, and I know I was 12 years old, and this man, and he couldn't have looked, you know, different from me, a younger Caucasian man. And he, just the way he spoke, the way he assured my parents that he was going to be able to help us. You know, they didn't understand the process, they were scared, they were, and I just remember the calmness, the how articulate he was, and the assurance that he gave them. And it was right then and there that I decided that's what I want to do. And I never wavered. I never changed and never looked back, never questioned it. Just that was it. 12, that was it. I was going to be a lawyer. And I didn't, you know, I know all I knew at that point was that law school was involved. But, you know, that's kind of my journey. So I decided from there. And man, never, well, you know, about a few years ago, or maybe about 10 years ago, I did contemplate switching careers and things like that. But other than that, but earlier on, I just kind of made up my mind, went for it.
And I'm glad you touched on law school. For many of us, many attorneys of color, our experiences differ. How would you describe yours? How was your law school experience?
So law school is a blur. I mean, it was at that time the hardest thing I'd ever done in my entire life. It was challenging. It was fun. I got to meet a lot of new people. My biggest regret was not staying present more and really enjoying the people. I look back and there were just so many missed opportunities. I was so focused on, you know, the tangible, just getting through and making sure that you know, I make good on my investment, but I missed out on the smaller things. Emory's a great law school. It just, you know, brought together a wonderful mix of individuals. Remember, we were a smaller class. I think one of the smaller class, there was only 211 of us. The African Americans, we were even, you know, smaller than that. You know, there was a handful of us, but we had I still pretty much, at least the ladies, are in touch with most, about half of them, and guys don't get in. I don't come across too often, but it was a difficult experience, probably more because of all the pressure I put on myself, just the pressure to succeed. That's what I remember most of it, just feeling this incredible weight of having to perform. And that's kind of self-inflicted. It is self-inflicted. I mean, the situation, you do want to do well. But looking back, I wish I had just breathed and enjoyed it more.
Powerful, man, powerful. Now, I think going to bar exam prep, one of the things I remembered was in writing the rule of laws for different subjects, the one for wills and estates, there was the rule of law about what a duly executed will looks like, you know, declare before at least two witnesses, etc. In doing that in law school and preparing for the bar, did you have an idea then that you would create a niche in estate planning?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it was just no, I didn't take not one estate planning class in law school.
Wow.
Not, it was just the farthest from my mind. So because I had this affinity for math and exactness, I actually wanted to go into tax law. And that was my I specialized in law school and international taxation in particular. And so that's kind of what I was geared up to do. And right around the time that I was graduating, I was trying to get into the IRS in DC. And it was right after, so I graduated in 02, which was a few months after 9/11. And there was a hiring freeze. So the federal government did a hiring freeze and weren't hiring any new employees. I remember getting that call that that they just weren't able. You know, I think I'd been on one or two interviews and I was devastated. And so I had to take some time to regroup. And I had worked for a bank prior to going to law school. So I thought, okay, well, what does that, you know, work with? And I thought, well, I'll try my hand at real estate. And so I got into real estate and I actually really enjoyed it. It's transactional. I knew I always wanted to be a transactional attorney. So I never wanted to litigate. That trial techniques or the first year we had a mock appellate court review. And I decided then, and the first semester that litigation was definitely not for me. And I pretty much held true to that. So I knew transactional law was going to be the way I was going to go. And so I went into real estate with a little bit of banking background and really enjoyed it. So first 10 years of my practice was in real estate. And so and after that, you know, the market did its thing with 08. And so I went into bankruptcy because a lot of my real estate clients were filing bankruptcy, unfortunately. But that was my least favorite area of the law. And from there, I transitioned to family law. And then, kind of I was searching. I really was. I was searching for meaning. And this was around the time that I thought about not practicing anymore. I actually, for during this time, so this is around 13, 14. I had gone to nursing school for a year. I know it's crazy. And it was while I was in nursing school, I was on Facebook, which at the time I rarely was ever. And I saw this ad from an attorney who said the and these were this was the pitch. It's something to the effect that you'd gone to law school, it didn't pan out the way you wanted to, you really want to help people, and you're frustrated. And I can show you how to love your practice again, love the practice of law. And I thought, okay, let me give it a shot. And went through the program and realized that it answered a question that had been that was really essential to me. A few years back, I'd gone through a divorce and I had a my son was born prior to that, and I was struggling. I'd gone through some postpartum and I was struggling with that, my own mortality and what would happen to my children. That was a legitimate question that I had. And I was embarrassed that I'd been practicing law probably about 10 years up until that point and really hadn't answered that question. I had a good answer for it. Like I really didn't know, like, what would happen to my kids if, you know, I passed away. And so I'd started on the path of pulling together. I knew that this was not, you know, this was not acceptable. And, after going through that process and piecing things together, meeting this attorney kind of was the final piece of that puzzle, because she laid out just, you know, her niche was work with parents and estate planning, and her plan was just was perfect for me. I mean, it was just absolutely perfect. And so I decided at that point that this was what I wanted to give back. I didn't know as a practicing attorney for 10 years how to properly plan for my own family, for my own children. I knew that wasn't common knowledge for the average person, and I wanted to make that available. So that's kind of how I got into estate planning.
You know, because Charlene, someone looking on, and we're going to touch on your practice and just how impactful it is. But many people don't understand that a lot of attorneys go through that season where we're wondering whether we made the right decision, one, in terms of a career, and also just trying to find our footing takes, it's a painful process. And I think It's not often stated to individuals how difficult that is. And I'm happy because the individual you described sounds, it's akin to like a mentor. I mean, in terms of you finding your footing and helping you to find your way. And I think every parent has that moment when we consider what would happen to our children if we were no longer here. So I think that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Say something to that attorney who is listening now, who is probably regretting, probably has some regrets about their space in law.
Well, law is such a, like anything else in life, it's a personal journey. So, and the one thing looking back, so I've been practicing up about 20 years, I can say, be easy on yourself. It's okay, right? So you went to law school. There was a reason why you went. Try to get in touch with that, you know, because it's this huge, you get caught up in all of the pomp and circumstance and the grades and, you know, if you want the firms and the offers and all of that. And you can sometimes lose yourself and lose your focus. So remind yourself of why you went to begin with, right? And get back to that place. And if you have moved on, and if it's no longer a passion for you, then don't be afraid to move on. The wonderful thing about law is that you can use it in any area. I mean, there are lawyers everywhere doing everything. You know, it's a wonderful platform. You're able to the training is invaluable. I mean, you can read a contract, you can understand, you can articulate, you can analyze. So the skills that you have developed are wonderful skills, and you probably paid a pretty penny for it. So, you know, just reshape that if you need to. Get in touch with, like I said, why you went to law school. And this goes for, you know, across the board, because in so many fields, sometimes you'll get burnt out. I mean, even in what you love. You know, it can be a dual-edged sword. You want to really do well, and then when you start, you get overworked and you get tired, you get burnt out, and you just have to, why am I doing this? And then how can I do it? Is it the thing, or is it how am I doing it? Right? And you tackle whichever one of those is the real issue. So I like taking quiet time. You know, I meditate. I go off to the side, and I just get quiet. You know, I love that text in the Bible that says, and the stillness is where you'll find God. Be still and know that I'm God. And so many years ago, I discovered that when it's quiet, when I'm still, that's when the answers come. And sometimes you have to do that. And you've got to shut out all the noise and all the expectations and all this. One of the things I had to come to grips with was, you know, what does it mean to be a lawyer? You know, I didn't look like the traditional lawyer. I'm not a litigator. I don't go to court. I don't, you know, so am I a real lawyer? No, I dealt with that. You're a real lawyer if you say you're a real lawyer, right? So you're it. You've done it. You have your degree, and it's just whatever you decide to do with it, it's okay.
Powerful, powerful. So I used what I would consider fancy words to describe what you do. I want to give you the opportunity to speak to lay people who have little or may not have a great grasp of what an estate planning attorney does. And I imagine for you, those who are familiar with your work, it may be limited to them saying, perhaps she does wills. I could get her to help me with a will. Talk to the layperson about what it is you do as
Thank
an
you.
estate planning attorney.
No, thank you so much. So I love talking about what I do because I really do enjoy helping people. So most of us went to law school for that, right? When I was sitting there at 12 watching this attorney, what stood out to me and struck me very powerfully was that he was helping us, right? And that's why I wanted to go to law school. I wanted to help. And this area of law, like so many for me, is very hands-on. So I really do get to help at the end of the process. I feel like people come out of it better with a plan. They feel they're at peace. They know they've done something good for their family. You know, I have that sense that I'm paying it forward. I'm doing something good, putting it out there that's gonna, you know, benefit. And in particular, I like working with parents, especially with small children, because at any stage in your life, you can benefit from planning. So that's what estate planning is. It's just planning for planning and preparing for any point in your life where you may not be able to manage your own affairs, right? You don't have to be deceased or gone for that to happen. You could be alive, you could have been in a car accident, you could be in a coma, you could just be even unavailable, out of the country or something like that. It's important to put plans and systems in place that can take care of your affairs, handle your stuff, pay your bills. Power of attorney is a really good and powerful tool that is a part of planning. It's useful. And even among couples, I get a lot of couples who say, well, I'm married, do I still need a power of attorney? Well, here in the state of Georgia, you do, and I think in many states. I'm licensed here in Georgia, so I'll reserve my advice for there for this location. But if you do not have legal authority to transact business on behalf of anyone else, even if you're married. So it's important that you empower someone else, give them the authority to do that. And of course, planning, estate planning also involves, what we traditionally think as of death planning. And it's packaging, who will manage your affairs, how your assets are going to be passed on to the next generation. And especially if you have young children, I mean, that's a really important conversation, because your children, if they're under 18, aren't legally able to manage their financial affairs, right? So you're going to have to create a plan where you have designated someone to manage it for you. And you want to think about who's going to take care of your kids. I mean, that's a really tough question to answer. Sometimes it's just, facing our mortality. No parent wants to think about that, especially when you have younger children. But I always like to say to my clients, and one thing that I've adopted, I say, when I'm planning with clients, it's not, thinking about your death, but it's about your children's life. It's about their living, right? So all parents, we want our children to have the absolute best, right? We want to plan. We plan for where they go to school. And we need to plan if we're not there, so that they can still have all of those things, right? Because we want them to have the best. It's about their life, not about our demise. It's about their life. And not just, if you don't have children, whomever you have in your life, that you want to plan for. Some adults are taking care of their parents, right? I mean, they're like their parents are totally dependent on them. Well, what happens, God forbid, if you're not there? Who's gonna take care of your parents? You want to create a plan for that. I mean, if you have disabled relatives that's dependent on you, or you may have an adult child that's, is gonna require assistance for the rest of their life, it's imperative to plan. And so planning is really centered around managing your affairs at a time, any point in time, whether you're alive and just incapacitated, or God forbid you've passed on and you're not able to manage. And it's also about thinking about the people that you're leaving behind, and what their life's going to look like, and how what's your best vision for them, and creating a plan that as much as possible will accomplish those goals.
I love it. I love it. And I must ask you, what have you seen in terms of your clients? What drives their unwillingness to plan?
So it's varied. A lot of folks, it's misinformation, I would say. I would say the number one thing is misinformation. I would say estate plan is a deceptively simple area of law. It comes off that way. Most people know something. Okay, I just need a will, or I can get, because most of these documents you can find online. So it's deceptively simple, and there's a lot of folks, national pundits, depending on where you are, that chime in some way. You need a trust. You need a trust. Everybody needs a trust. Things like that. And so, a lot of people have some kind of inkling. They have some notion of what it is, but they don't have all the information. So on the one hand, they may feel that it's something they can handle, and they come and they say, okay, well, this is what I want, and you just start naming out. I said, well, let's go through the process, right? Let's go through the process, because estate planning, for me, practicing with me, is based on three things. It's what you have, it's what your goals and objectives are, and it's who you're planning for. So we want to look at all those three things, and that drives the conversation. And so when we start breaking that down, and we educate, and we advise, we empower, and highlight some of the things that will happen, and you find that most folks have they don't have a clue. what they thought and what will actually happen are two completely different things. And so it's important, just like, I mean, this isn't, this your children, your loved ones, they're your greatest asset, right? They're the most important things in life. So you want to make sure that you're taking care of the most important thing. What you've accumulated, how can you pass that on so it can benefit them most and not be fought over. And and I've seen very small estates rip families apart, not necessarily, and it's and it was that notion that, well, I don't have a lot, so I don't need to plan. Well, that's probably when you do need to plan, because you don't have a lot. There's gonna be folks fighting over a little. And so everyone can benefit from planning, but that misinformation, get informed. It doesn't, even if you think, well, I don't have, I just have a small estate, or I just need a simple will. I hear that all the time. I don't have a lot. I don't have a lot. You can still benefit from planning.
Awesome. You have described in what in my mind is the ideal situation where somebody comes to you and they say, I need to create a plan for whether it's my kids, parents, myself, etc. But I guess the inverse to that is when you get the call that somebody is probably near terminal, etc. And suddenly, Miss Green, we need you to help us now because this is our situation. Talk to us about what that is like for a family who may be grieving or maybe dealing with something traumatic when there's no plan in place. That is the other situation which is not often spoken about.
So, two things, two scenarios come to mind. So there's those, last minute deathbed sort of thing where they're trying to pull together, and those are the are really difficult. It's very difficult to try to put wrap your mind around everything, your own mortality when it's upon you. It's just that the best time to plan is now, when you're healthy, when everything, when you can think clearly, when there's nothing imminent happening. Right. So you want to put plans in place. And also you can get to the point and the place where it's too late to plan. You may be alive, but it's just too late because you don't have capacity, or it can be challenged, or it's just, and so you want to do planning as far in advance of anything happening as possible. And then the other time, after someone has passed away, that's a lot to deal with. And even if there is a plan, it could be very difficult because you're dealing with emotions, you're dealing with the loss of someone, the impact that's going to have a ripple impact in the family, in and of itself. And if there is no planning, it's the confusion that follows that is the most damaging that I can see. And having a plan cuts down on the confusion. It is a roadmap. So if this happens, and we know it's going to happen, right? At this particular point, this event, these are the steps, so that you freeze your family up so that they can go ahead and grieve, and they have a roadmap. When people plan with me, they're my cards are in the binder, so we pick that up. Their loved ones know where to call. Okay, well, let's start here. We know where to start, right? And you have someone that can walk you through the process. And that is sometimes even in a very, very simple situation. I've had a grieving spouse, and it was just the two of them. It was just her and her husband. And so there are no other heirs. She's it. She's getting everything. There's a will, there's a plan. And it was still incredibly difficult. It took her months to go through the process. And just being there for her and walking her through it, she still needed help. So thinking about your loved ones and ensuring, and now there are other families that, they're young folks or whatever, and they are fairly savvy, and they're going to get through the process. And there's, an astute person there that's very business minded. And I said, well, that one, they're going to take care of it. And so, that you designate that person that can will get the business side of it wrapped up and get started. get the process rolling. So it allows you to be able to at least put the right person in place, the people that you know are best suited for that, make your decisions so that at even upon dying, it's about them not just communicating your wishes rather than infusing their judgment and having that judgment questioned. That can be a tremendous burden on folks, and it can tear families apart. So planning is just the way to put everyone at ease, let them know that these are my decisions. All you're doing is carrying it out, right? All you're doing is just carrying out my wishes. And so that's the best way to go on either end.
And I'll say this for the person who is listening, who may be wondering, it sounds like there are tons of benefits to having a plan, but it's so sophisticated that I don't know if I can afford it. Would you suggest that that person start small and then as they, it's an investment, obviously, but should they start with something small as opposed to having nothing at all? Because they maybe from their vantage point, what's best for them, they can't afford it at this time.
So often, and that's kind of part of the misinformation. So if you feel that you can't afford it, then you do want to start small. And that's probably the best plan for you. Because once you start accumulating, having more assets, that's when the plans get more sophisticated. Right. So the best advice is to start where you are. Get something in place. As soon as you're an adult, for college kids going off, they can benefit from planning, having a POA and healthcare directives. Every adult should have that starting at 18. Right. That's just being responsible. If you go off to school and something happens, God forbid, you've got money, whether it's your student loan refund checks, or you've got them locked away in a bank account, and because you're an adult, your parents can get access to that, right? You'll have things that you've accumulated, even just being away, that they won't necessarily be able to manage if you haven't given them the proper authority, because now you're an adult. So it's the adult thing to do to start off with, at least designating your parents or someone else you trust to be able to step in and manage your financial affairs, and to although your parents will be able to make healthcare decisions for you, but thinking through, well, what do I want? I know for a young adult, that's a little bit much. We're gonna live forever. We don't want to think about bad things happening, but at least get the ball rolling there. And then as let's say you get married and you now have someone that you care about. Well, something happens to you, what would you want to, how would you want her life to be? So that's when if you don't have a lot, you can go out and get some life insurance. That's a good idea, right? Because you want her to have something that will take care of her. And that's a part of planning. So that's going to come up in your discussion. You still, at that point, need a simple will because you may not have accumulated a lot of assets. But now we can start talking about those things, life insurance, maybe. And then as you get a child, well, now you definitely need to get more sophisticated planning, right? So now you got to think about, God, if something happens to me, I may need to up my life insurance so I can take care of my children and my spouse and my child. But also, who's going to take care of my kids? So now I need to think about guardianship and then think about who's going to manage their financial affairs. So your plan will get more sophisticated as you go on. As your children get older, you want to revisit that, right? And especially, they're not no longer children, you definitely want to revisit it, right? So I recommend every 3 years or so, pull your plan out, dust it off, look at it, make sure it still works, and upgrade from there.
Wow. And almost finally, in my work as a public defender doing primarily criminal defense work, the pandemic amplified some of the substance abuse, mental health issues in our communities, you know? I'm wondering for you though, what did the pandemic, were there any positives from the pandemic in terms of estate planning and people dealing with, their mortality, et cetera?
Right. I would say the pandemic, like most things in life, was certainly had its upside. There was a new awareness of our mortality and the need for planning. So I did find that people were more open to have the conversation, and they were more amenable to beginning the process because they knew someone. or they knew someone that knew someone. Everyone was affected. So many, it was on such a large scale that everyone's affected by COVID in some way. And so it was on the forefront of people's mind that this is something we need to plan because they knew someone who passed away suddenly. And now, they of course hadn't anticipated it. And now, of the fallout, having to deal with the fallout. So it had a positive impact on my practice because more people were aware of it. It was an easier sell. It was a much easier sell during that time and for a while too, up until last year, this year. I think just now we just have to keep the conversation going. And so people understand that, of course, it's still important. People are much more willing to put that investment up and get the plan, an initial plan in place, just in case something happened, especially if they were a little bit older.
Awesome. Charlene, I want to give you the opportunity to share ways people can get in touch with you and your office. There's something that was between the lines. Charlene didn't say it explicitly, but I want you also to know, listeners, planning doesn't mean you're gonna die. It doesn't mean it's not gonna accelerate, your leaving Earth, that's another myth as well. People believe if I start planning, it's a morbid idea, and so they don't. But I want to give you the opportunity to share ways people can get in touch with you and your office. Please share all the links, all the medias that you are a part of, all the handles, etc., so people can get in touch with you.
Thank you for that. You are right. That is one of those myths that if you plan, I'm not. I initially when I first started a few years, focused on this area full time, I got that initially. Folks were like, "Well, I don't want to plan. It's just, it's just too morbid." But I think I've conditioned myself and folks that come to me to redirect the focus to who you're planning for and their life rather than. Rather than you, what's happening with you or what could happen. And so that's something that doesn't necessarily come to the forefront of my mind because I've trained myself and I try to, that's the message I'm trying to get out. So to get in touch with me, I would love to work with you if you're anywhere in the state of Georgia at website sgreenpclaw.com. Phone number for the office is 678-468-2602. Facebook is also on the sgreenpclaw.com, LinkedIn. Believe it's the same, or it's under Charlene S. Green and Charlene S. Green PC. Instagram, same thing, sgreenpclaw. Facebook, I know I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, all under sgreenpclaw.com. And that's also the website.
Awesome. And I'll be sure to put in the notes everything Charlene has said in terms of her contact. If she said it verbally, but I'll put it in the notes so you'll have access to it as well. Just finally, Charlene, talk to us about the benefits of pivoting, because it sounds to me like your journey, and even in reading your bio, there was a point where you were advocating for prisoners' rights. So it seemed like your journey had a lot of twists and turns, and pivoting was definitely involved. Talk to listeners about the benefits of pivoting as we close out.
Absolutely. Definitely lots and lots of twists and turns. So, like I mentioned, getting into law school is all about helping. And I knew I didn't want to be a litigator, but I met a wonderful one of my classes, Stephen Bright. He's a wonderful attorney. And at that point, he was in charge of the Southern Center for Human Rights, a nonprofit organization here in Atlanta. And I interned there for a year. And Stephen and his team there were instrumental in getting several capital death row inmates, their sentences turned around, overturned, and just by presenting evidence that there were things that went wrong during the trial or things didn't There was not enough evidence to support it, but also on a large scale, just improving the conditions of prison. So I was able to go in, interview prisoners, come back with that data with this is while I was in law school, and give it to the very, very smart attorneys there, who was able to package that in a way that could, be used to bring around real change, just things like making sure they got their medicine, make sure that the environment was safe. And it was a really eye-opening experience. And it was insanely rewarding work that I always look back fondly on. So that was, but I knew that that wasn't my passion necessarily. I certainly would love to do that, maybe more on a just give back of my time, in my time or resources I've donated to that organization, and do that, try to do that on a more regular basis. But I knew that my strengths were in, I call those the concrete areas of law. That's just for the more exact, the exact like transactional work. And so I went into real estate again because I had that banking background, and just kind of wherever life took me. When my real estate clients needed a bankruptcy attorney, I became a bankruptcy attorney. When I went through a divorce, I became a family law attorney. And when my kids needed a plan, I had to sit down and hash one out, and eventually became an estate plan attorney. So I was, just like the 12-year-old in me, figured out what I wanted to do and just kind of stuck to it. Once I did get into it, I was always trying to find my way, find where I fit. And so I did move, and I'm very happy that I did that because I really do enjoy where I am. I feel like this really takes advantage of my strengths. I get to work more one-on-one with clients and really produce a product that's gonna majorly impact their life, hopefully for, generations to come. So.
I'm so thankful for this conversation, and I'd like to challenge us to invest in Charlene's time, whether you're a member of a civic or a religious organization. Please have her come to your organization. I think for many of us, we need to start having the important conversations about our mortality. I think it's worth talking through our fears about death, our fears about leaving our children behind, our fears about having life insurance plans that we don't understand, but we've been paying premiums on. Please begin having the conversations with a very competent, compassionate attorney who can help to guide you in your estate planning. Charlene, thank you so much for sharing with us. Thank you for the impact that you're not, no doubt, having. And I believe someone who has listened is now thinking it's time to dust off that old will that needs updating. It's time to start addressing some tax savings in terms of a more sophisticated plan. And I'm hoping that if you have the opportunity, in my notes, you'll see her information. Please reach out. Get the conversation started and get a plan for your family. And as Charlene indicated, start small, if at all, but don't put it off because you don't believe you have all the resources at this point. Start with something small and then build until you have just what you need. Charlene, thank you so much again for joining us on the Water Word Podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Most welcome. Most welcome.